this show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Hey, independent comic book noise fans. We're back after a short hiatus with Super Steve sunning himself on vacation. It's me, Andrew the LA Rabbit, Whirlwind Kevin.
Yay!
And Phil, the Ottawa Otter.
Good day.
And I'm bringing you our... We're back again. Apologies for the delay, but we've all been busy doing exciting things. But we had to come back and talk about our favorite non-Big Two comic books.
Yeah, too much Marvel noise. Jeez, what were we thinking?
While it may be dear in our hearts, we love all sorts of comic books. And just as a reminder, this show is potentially not all ages. I wouldn't really think, I happen to think that you'd have to be super easily offended to be offended by anything we say. But I'm probably the worst person to judge the offensibility level of our discourse.
You know what I was offended by was Super Steve posting photos of like, look at me, I'm on vacation, I'm super awesome. And then I'm like, jeez.
Yeah, that's Super Steve. If he wasn't so super, he would get in a lot of trouble. Yeah. But you can find our, we're on the forums that are hosted by the 11 O'Clock Comics at bullpenbulletinspodcast.com/forum. We're in the little comic book noise section, so you can come say hi. There is a Facebook page, and we're also all available on Twitter, although yeah. Phil is less available on Twitter.
Yeah, yes. I still harass him sometimes. We also have our own Twitters for the podcast.
That's right. Indie Comic BN, right? Is that what it is?
Indie Comic Book N?
Yeah, that was it. I was close. There were some connection of Indie Comic Book Noise and some abbreviations. If you just try all the possible permutations, at some point you'll hit the correct one.
This is true.
So, who wants to kick it off, boys? Who's got something hot off the presses?
Should we talk about this? This is so indie. Transformers versus G.I. Joe?
This is indie. I mean, IDW, doesn't that stand for independent? Well, you may remember, we talked briefly, I think Kevin led the charge on the Free Comic Book Day edition. And we're back. This is the first issue. I happened to pick up the Comic-Con exclusive wraparound cover with Megatron and Optimus Prime fighting along with Cobra Commander and the Jet and Snake Eyes on the outside of it.
Did you get it at Comic-Con?
I did, in fact, get it at San Diego Comic-Con.
I find I'm getting these con-exclusive covers just at the store sometimes. It seems like they just sell them anywhere now.
Oh, they do, but I've noticed some stores really do a ridiculous markup on them. I mean, maybe it's just a particular store, but I couldn't believe... I believe this was... I want to say it was like a $5 comic, maybe 10 at the most. Mm-hmm. And I saw other places where they wanted $20 if you were going to order it. And that just seems a bit extreme of a markup. Yeah. I mean, you shouldn't really be doubling your money, but I don't know. I guess our friends in the retail industry need to make their ducats as well. But this is the continuation, jumping off, right off where we left off, kind of in the Zero issue. And Kevin, you said you had read this.
Yes, I think I'm glad that I read the Zero issue. Like, you don't need to read the Zero issue, but I feel very happy that I did. Even though this is like the first, like the Free Comic Book Day issue, you just jump in there and there's some crazy stuff going on that you don't really know why, but, you know, you're going to have fun, you're going to pick it up along the way.
That's kind of my problem with these Free Comic Book issues that start off series right now, because there's a couple series I've tried this year where I didn't go to Free Comic Book Day, so I'm stuck in the middle of the story now, and I didn't even know that that's where it began until after I was buying it, you know? I don't like when series start off that way.
Yeah, I've noticed a lot of series, they'll put it out for free, and then they'll put out the first issue of the same thing later on.
Yeah, I don't mind paying for it again later, but there's a lot that didn't do that. Like, that it wasn't available to me.
Well, I would say that this definitely captures sort of the feeling of Tom's previous work. So if you enjoyed or didn't enjoy Godland or some of his more recent American Barbarian or books like that, you would probably feel the same about this book. Like, his name is prominently displayed, but I don't think I'd like to think I'd be able to guess it was him as one of the creative forces behind it. Kevin, do you concur that this is within his style?
Definitely, but I wouldn't say that it's like, even if you didn't like his stuff so much, like, this still has the Transformers and G.I. Joe vibe in here, so you might just look at it as a crazy episode or something. So that might be able to get you over the hump if you weren't exactly enamored with his other stuff.
What's odd is this should be, these properties should be in my wheelhouse, but I think I just have run out of a nostalgia allotment. I guess it's all taken up by maybe Star Wars or other properties, because I certainly remember I had these toys as a kid and watched the cartoons and everything, but I don't feel the same, like, I enjoy them, but I don't feel the same kind of giddy joy at seeing, oh, look, it's, you know, the Soundwave character or whatever. Like, I think I'm enjoying the story, but I just don't, I'm not sure why I don't feel more, like, enthused about it. But I might partially blame the sort of recent big media adaptions. The G.I. Joe film and the Transformers films really didn't do anything for me. And I think they may have kind of soured the last of my interest in these properties.
Oh, yeah.
See, I never saw them because, you know, didn't look like something I would enjoy. So I don't have that type of thing. But then when I'm reading this, I'm like, I don't necessarily have the huge attachment, because I'm like, oh, when are they going to get to Beast Wars or whatever? On one level, but on another one, like, I'm enjoying the crazy mix-up of ideas and just how insane everything is.
Well, I have to say, while I'm no expert, this feels to me like they're being very true to those old toys and the characters and how they were portrayed and how they worked. So those things were kind of interesting looking, but not perhaps the most realistic, I guess, would be the way to say it. So you do have some, if that's going to, like, if you're looking for some more accurate representation of the military, this is not the book for you. You know, if you like the activity, this is not, you're going to find these kind of, because the toys were sort of garish and goofy, and he's captured that feeling well. The other thing that's reminiscent for those of us of age is a lot of the backgrounds are kind of, they're either filled with little characters, but there's not much actual detail.
Yeah.
It's a lot of colored backgrounds, which I know for me is that's a bit of a comic book nostalgia trip.
Yeah, the G.I. Joes are pretty much the stand-ins for, like, military superheroes in a way. It's not, if you're looking for certain things, it's not going to be here, but if you're looking for other stuff, yeah, definitely a good time.
Yeah, yeah. As you mentioned, the kind of nonstop action and sort of frenetic pacing and sort of overwhelming the logic of it at times.
Well, yeah, I'm just
on a roller coaster.
Yeah, it's like the second page, and it's like they have a two-panel page, but I'm looking at all those characters on that one page. There's just so much going on. It's almost like a Where's Waldo, because you're just like, oh, yeah, there's guys in the house shooting at each other, and then there's guys running off of, I assume that this is all something, but I can't, you know, place it. But, like, guys are, like, going off of a tank on their motorcycle, leaping over another tank that's shooting at another guy. And then on a roof, there's two teams of guys shooting at each other. It's just, there's so much to look at. It's all colorful.
And they have all their goofy G.I. Joe, like the one guy in the orange Shocker-esque outfit, He's the laser character. I remember having that toy. So he fired a laser rifle in combat, which seems perhaps not very practical. And then the Cobra Hiss Tank, its design had like a clear reddish tinted windshield for the driver, which seems like a poor design for a tank. But, you know, it's a funny, you know, that's what the toy looked like. And so you have all this exploding action, word balloons, sound effects, and then the little excerpt sort of explaining some of the characters as well.
I like how they have a sign in the background. It says Springfield, and it says a nice little town, and it has a family image there. Well, like, the whole town's on fire. Good times.
But again, you're not going to find the fidelity is to the superhero portrayal and not the strictest of anatomy senses. The sort of foreshortening tricks that make dynamic old-timey comic books are in play here. So, for some reason, these sorts of distortions of anatomy don't bother me at all. Whereas some people will know I've gone off on certain 90s style distortions of anatomy.
You notice all this, like half of this stuff is either like multi-panel, or then it breaks off into like a splash page or like the two-panel page. But it's not bothersome. It's just to give so much detail to everything that's going on. Like, there's still a lot of words and a lot of stuff happening, but it's just like a splash page or something. It's not like your traditional splash where, like, it's zooming in on someone's head and there's, like, one word or something.
Well, also, it's not just the splash of, like, someone in a pose.
Yeah.
Right, there's always stuff going on in the background as well.
Yeah, they're, like, transforming, or there's all these guys coming in from somewhere, and then, like, they're all talking to each other or shooting, and a lot of mayhem.
I mean, to be honest, I guess we owe some brief description of the plot, but, you know, basically, Cobra and G.I. Joe are beating the stuffing out of each other, and the Transformers get involved, and there's going to be the inevitable alliance between the Decepticons, which are the bad robots, and Cobra, and hopefully between G.I. Joe and the Autobots, but that's the part of the coalition that hasn't come together yet.
Yeah, and of course, Snake Eyes is off on his own.
Yes, and we should mention also that there is about 6 or 7 pages of back matter where they go through and they discuss kind of going through the script. The two, John Barber is the other creator that's credited on here. And they kind of discuss their breaking down. But what I also found somewhat refreshing was there wasn't actually 10,000 covers for this comic book.
Yeah.
Always pleasant. I mean, there's obviously, I'm holding the San Diego one, and there was, you know, some retailer exclusives and some basic ones, but they didn't go too far out. I don't know if anyone nailed down the Rob Liefeld exclusive cover, but I had to stick with this dynamic pose of the two, the teams on front. But yeah, at the end, it ends with a character I'm unfamiliar with, and that's the Cobra Commander with the Cobra head. I don't
know. Yeah.
Someone wearing a, the Serpentress is from the back matter. I'm unfamiliar with that character. I'll admit, I guess.
I think I remember him.
Fans, I should. Yeah. Oh, it should be a woman. Serpentor was the man.
Yeah.
Version. That one I remember. But the Serpentress, I do not remember.
Okay.
And then they have the G.I. Joe shuttle at the end, and they're about to launch into Cybertron.
I was kind of surprised, but I guess they're just taking characters from wherever, because I'm like, doesn't Serpentor come from, like, later on? But I guess, they like, why wait? Like, just throw all the stuff in now.
Yeah, he seems to have just, you know, pour all these characters onto the page, and why not? Like, that's part of, if you're going to be enjoying this, you want the hectic pacing and everything happening at once. Like, that's what they're offering us. And I'm all for it. Keep piling it on, because you want this to be, like I said, it's not really your thinking comic. I mean, maybe at the end they'll have slipped some clever ideas in there, but it's just good old licensed comic fun. But Phil, you said you were never into those other G.I. Joe or Transformers.
No, I don't mind Transformers comics sometimes, but G.I. Joe, I'm just not a fan of.
Well, if you get a chance to flip through, I think the free comic book one might be on by now.
I flipped through issue one, and I didn't really like the toy look and artwork, kind of.
It's definitely, like I said, evocative of the toys, so that's an important part.
But yeah, G.I. Joe, none of the characters interest me at all, so it's just too much of a turnoff for me.
Well, what have you got that's a turn on?
Well, I believe we both read that comic Hexed.
Yes, and this is this title has been in on the shelf for a little while, so to speak. Like, it came out a few years ago, and then we were seeing, I assume we're referring to the new one that just came out.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, because the blurb in the back for like Boom titles coming out this month, it says fan favorite horror creation returns. So what was the previous one?
The previous one was the same. This one is Michael Alan Nelson, who's done a bunch of Boom books.
I follow a lot of his books. He did an awesome job with 28 weeks later, or 28 days later. He did that comic.
Yes, and he also did the, we've covered it before, and I completely spaced. It's about the guy who's undead. It's a...
Oh, Helium? Or
a fantasy one.
Yeah, Helium or something like that. Or.
And he came back from the dead. Oh, my poor brain. Doesn't have enough jam in it, but I used to always see him at the convention. He's usually at the Boom booth, and I was always like, oh, man, I really love this comic, and like you say, he does the horror comics as well.
Mm-hmm. He's really good with them, yeah.
But
you're gonna tell me what he did before.
Oh yeah. Sorry. We're gonna reboot and pretend that Andy's brain is now off on. I, like Super Steve, plan to soon head to the exciting land of vacation, and some people might claim that I have already left for parts unknown, but I say no. If you get a chance to meet the man, he's nice. He also did some DC work as well, but he was on the Supergirl title for a little bit. It was Valen the Outcast. That's the book.
Okay.
I was referring to that was lasted not nearly long enough. I was a really big fan of it, but as you say, 28 days later and books like that. Mm-hmm. But Hexed was Rios was the artist.
Okay.
And that was like her first big work, I think, or at least it was early in her days.
So there is a miniseries out there or something?
Yeah. So what's happened is we're now back to so I think there was some concern when there was a shift in the artist team, because everyone's like, oh man, you know, Emma Rios, and I was such a iconic kind of artist, you know what I mean? Yep. She's really blown up. But I happen to think that Dan Moore is doing the art chores with colors by Gabriel Cassetta, and I think it's different from Emma Rios, obviously, but I think the art's really great on this new one.
I never saw the original, but yeah, it's very nice in this one.
Well, are you familiar with Emma Rios at all?
I am, yeah.
Okay, so she was the artist on it. And so you had the female protagonist that was working, and she was the one that she's the featured again in this book, too.
I didn't feel lost at all or anything reading it.
No, they seem to really jump right. Well, they start a new tale, but you're going to find I think that this is because they had to. I mean, this book came out in like 2008, 2009, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. So we're talking it's quite a ways back. But this one features our protagonist, who is involved on a mission that goes south. And in going south, she then has to sort of make up for a mistake that happens. And that leads to a further mistake that happens. Found that Nelson's books are always good for that. Like, there's always the natural flow of consequences. Phil, what did you think of...
I love this book. Just the way like they use the painting as a gateway into another world, and just all the action that came out of that. I don't want to ruin too much, but or the main villain, which was this kind of like almost lady, she would touch someone and speak through them, through their bodies kind of thing. There was a lot to really grab me in, I find.
And I think that while it has some horror elements, I'd say it leans more towards suspense than horror. Would that be a fair?
Yeah, for sure.
But I think his writing lent like that. To me, those are the elements of horror that are the most interesting. And that is kind of the tension in the book, less than sort of what sort of crazy, horrific, distasteful elements can we pile up. I like that there's the tension of, and he also does a good job that while she's here to perform this, it opens with her stealing this
title. Well, basically she's that's what she does. She goes around and gathers occult artifacts that are too dangerous for to be in the hands of others, kind of thing, from what I understood anyway.
Right, but she makes it clear, they make it clear that early on in the book that she cares for the people, because what leads to the problem is there's this older security guard that, and he has a heart attack, and so that leads to her casting a spell to try and save him. Leads to the next and the next, and
which is really cool the way they do it.
A clever way of explaining sort of who she's, kind of an anti-hero, but not so much of an, you know, she's not going to just let this innocent guy get sacrificed.
Well, she doesn't mind stealing, but she's never going to hurt an innocent person.
Right. And it seems like, so I thought that was a smart way to not only set up the plot elements, but give us a feel for who the character is.
Until you meet her creepy mother, and then you don't know what's going on.
So I think that I'm glad to hear. I had read Hexed, but I had read it out of the library. And so I haven't read it in years.
I really want to find it now. I hope they reprint it or something.
So I was like, oh, I feel like I vaguely remember things, but I can't pin it down. But like you, I felt I wasn't lost trying to follow along with it.
No, not at all. Like, I didn't even know until I got to the back of the book, and then that's where the blurb was. And then I saw that there was previous stuff.
I mean, I will say Mora is different from Rios. But I think he does the fantastic.
Well, just equally, the painting looks so cool, I find. Like,
equally as well as the magic, the fantastic, and the scenes where people are just standing around. To me, there's a bit of a almost kind of a Eastern influence to him.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that I wouldn't be surprised if there was some slight manga in his background.
No, I agree with that for sure.
But as you say, there are some interesting magical concepts. The tension is good. I think this will be a worthy successor, and I hope it does well. I have the Emma Rios cover, which has the horrific witch figure at the bottom.
Okay, and then she's sitting on top of the name?
Yeah.
Okay, I have that one too, yeah.
Which I think is a pretty striking cover as well. But I was glad to pick it up.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be collecting this for sure. Monthly. It's something I'll look forward to.
I am going to, we've talked lately how there's a slight chance, I don't want to be premature, but Dynamite may have turned a slight corner.
Yeah,
what's with that?
They've gathered a bunch of pretty serious names that are doing titles for them. And I had to go and pick up
The banner is called Creators Unleashed, this long.
Yeah. And I was just, you know, I've read some Dynamite, but I've also poked a little fun at them. But I got to say, the talent they've lined up is pretty good. This Captain Very Victory good. And the Galactic Rangers, this is going to be a Kirby piece. So it won't surprise you to see Joe Casey back. obviously, my earlier mention of Godland would not owes a great deal to the king himself. But what I thought was interesting about this is there's shared art duties. You're looking at Nathan Fox, Jim Rugg, and Ulysses Farinas, who I'm not familiar with. And then Brad Simpson is the colorist. So you'd think, oh man, that's a little dodgy. You know what I mean? Having three separate art teams on the book. and the Kirby bit. Like, is this going to not work at all? How, what's going to happen? Because this is going to cause some consternation among people. But while I really liked Kirby's visuals, I wasn't always for his storytelling. So, you know, some of these later characters and ideas he did didn't always resonate as well with me. But I always liked looking at it. So I actually thought that was one of the things I liked about Godland, was I felt it was being true to the images, but sort of updating the story in a way that's more accessible to me.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing just throws you right in the mix of it. There is no, you know, there's like a little paragraph of where you are, but basically there's these warring factions and you're on this ship filled with all these aliens getting attacked. And they have little blurbs for everyone. There's the major, the sergeant, the lieutenant, the private first class, and their role. So it's almost something like out of a Star Wars, Star Trek, where you've got these military things. But there's also the high concepts going fast and furious. And they're basically attacking this the title character, Captain Victory. But the trick that they've done in the backstory, you find out, is they found a way not only to clone Captain Victory, but to transfer all his memories. And so that when he's cloned, he doesn't remember. He just ends up getting switched. So right now, they're in this fight to destroy all these clones, but they're able to offload one of the clones. And one of the clones ends up on Earth, but he loses some of his memory.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where it ends up there. But then there's another clone that's crashed on another one that's all scarred and destroyed looking. And the different art styles meld well together, and there's also different sort of plot points, like flashbacks and the different Earths, that make sense for having the different artists. So I thought it worked. I don't know if they're going to continue.
I like when they do that myself, personally.
Working with the different artists, but it didn't work at all. I'm really like Jim Rugg. I like Joe Casey. This mm-hmm. is similar to that Transformers book. Like, you just get thrown in. But a lot of... Kevin, you've read some Joe Casey. It's not unfamiliar for him to kind of push you into the deep end of the pool.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think I've read quite a bit of Casey and Kirby and pretty much all the influences there.
Yeah, so if that's the type of thing you're interested in and you don't mind the multiple artists, at least on these, then I would say I would definitely recommend Captain Victory. But I fully understand if you aren't that thrilled with them splitting the art duties. Or if you're like, look, I don't need the crazy Kirby mania mashup thing. That's not my bag, or I just prefer the original. Like I said, for me, in some ways, it works a bit better because of the updated, stylized writing.
You know, one thing that no one talks about is that series he did before this one at Dark Horse. It was like a 9-issue... 2012 superhero type of thing, and I never hear anyone talk about it, and I'm always like, I don't even remember what it's called now, but I'm always like, yeah, I wonder how that worked out.
Yeah, I don't remember either, because to be honest, I think when I see Joe Casey, I think Image.
Yeah.
So I was quite surprised to see this coming out through Dynamite, but they probably have the license to the character, and also, as we talked about, their new initiative. I mean, look, maybe this thing's going to crash and burn or whatever, but I got to give him full credit for trying something different.
Well, yeah, I think he might have... Go on.
Yeah, I think he might have did the same thing. I believe that other series had, like, three different artists an issue and probably had one of the artists from the current series.
It makes sense because also... you know, at least Rugg's pretty busy.
Yeah.
And Fox, I'm sure, also has things. Like I said, I'm unfamiliar with the third name. But I just thought, oh, that's a good way to keep up the kind of pacing you're going to want to get. Because certainly, as we've discussed before, the other thing you need with these smaller books is you need to not fall too far behind if you can.
Yeah.
I think that really derails the monthly effort when there's a big gap. Like, say you get the first two issues out, then you have a 4-month delay for the third issue, yeah. And then I'm fine. You know, it just, at least with me personally, even if I'm really liking it, I'll forget to pick it up or it'll slip to the bottom of the stack.
But, you know, it doesn't surprise me in a way, because they had all that, like, Project Superpowers and all that type of stuff. So that's sort of, like, let's take some older property and, like, work it in there. I don't know if that, the original Kirby Galactic Rangers was ever collected, because I know Image was trying to put that out, and I think it just got delayed or whatever, and then I kind of forgot about it. But I got the hardcover for the one before that, which was the Silver Star. I don't know if you've ever read it.
I did read it, and while I really liked the artwork, the story kind of, his dialogue at times.
Yeah, it was kind of weird.
But, you know, pretty, even towards the end, I always thought, yeah, some people knock his art. I think his art stayed good. It's just that dialogue of his was really, it was just a cadence and it was kind of heavy, and I had trouble getting to the root of the characters.
Yeah, I would still say his art and, like, the Silver Star and everything was still as good, if not better, than some of his earlier stuff. Like, I don't feel like there was really a decline or anything.
No, but I did. How do you feel about the dialogue and everything? Does it work for you on those older Kirbys?
It depends what it is. Like something like Commandy or something, I'm like, I don't really care. But maybe that's because it's in a foreign world to begin with, so it's not like you're going to say, whoa, people on Earth don't talk like that. Like, it's in another place. Who knows how things have went down? But, and I think he usually tries to place himself, like, in those type of environments. Like, I haven't read a lot of the, what is it, some of the stuff from DC where it was like, it's not the Boy Commandos. Who's the Boy Legion?
The Newsboy Legion?
Yeah, like, I haven't read stuff like that, so maybe it would stick out more to me in something like that than the more fantastic stuff.
Well, I tried some of those Kirby Simon books, and I liked the visuals, but I think I told you guys out of the library, I accidentally got the Spanish language version one.
That's right.
And it really was no, like, I was just as fine because I had read some of the ones in English.
Yeah.
Like, well, really, I can figure out the story, and I'm mainly looking at these for the pretty pictures. So it's all,
yeah,
it all works out for me.
I think the artwork definitely helps smooth things over if you're not feeling it, but yeah.
And Phil, I'm pretty sure you're not super big into the old-timey comics, right?
No, I find them boring.
Okay. I just didn't want you to be left out, but I had a feeling from our past discussions that the dialogue of it just leaves you cold, I know.
Yeah, they just don't hold up for me, because I like stakes in my comics.
Yeah, yeah, I don't want to get into a whole Lee Kirby discussion, but yeah, Lee definitely brings some dialogue chops to the equation sometimes.
I am completely, as you guys know, from my Marvel Noise days, I've waxed rhapsodic about Mr. Ditko, but I find his like Captain Atom and stuff like that from prior to his Marvel days, or maybe it was right after, I forget, I know Steve did. I find that stuff, they have those DC archives, I just couldn't get through it, you know, reading it.
Yeah. It's
really just, let's just describe what's on the page type of thing.
So this is a Creators Unleashed comic?
I guess so, in a way.
Like, it's, it has, it's the, like, banner on top?
No, because the problem is it's not their property.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But
I thought it was one of those books. Okay.
But I think it's in the same vein because of the pedigree of the creators. Mm-hmm. Like, I consider it part of, if not part of that banner, part of their attempt to sort of step up. You know, it's a high-profile title, high-profile.
Because anything with that banner by Dynamite right now is worth picking up.
Because, I mean, it is licensed, but it's, to me, it's something I'm going to be more of a fan of than, say, I know we talked about, like, you know, the Chaos stuff, and there's an Alice Cooper book coming out.
Would you put it in between, like, the original stuff and, like, the Gold Key stuff?
Yeah, yeah, somewhere in that range where it is licensed, but they're working out. I mean, you know, you got to give them credit. They're reaching out to get Neil Gaiman.
He's busy at Marvel right now.
For their Last Temptation which is, I believe it's going to be an adaptation of a story by Neil Gaiman and Alice Cooper. And like we've talked about, they got Bill Willingham for the Legendary, and that is a creator own. But I think that, like I said, I'm all about Dynamite trying to reach out.
They're doing good, because their another title they did is Terminal Hero by Peter Milligan, or Devilers by Joshua Hale Filkoff. They're pretty good.
And the whole Flash Gordon, and then
I can't stay away from the properties right now. Although those old Valiant ones or whatever, the Gold Key ones, I did like those.
Yeah, I just like to see when the companies are trying things, and it feels like all of them are really pushing. I mean, Image for a long time has been banging out the number ones. Feels like IDW's a bit revitalized too.
We've talked about like they're all putting out great comics. Yes.
What about Oni Press? They've been putting out some. Yeah. Like they have their whole Six Gun.
They're getting way better. Yeah.
And the Bunker. Like, I mean, it seems like you just go. I can't think of any company that's really struggling in this.
Nope.
Or at least any of the big ones.
I mean, Red 5 is putting stuff out again.
Yeah.
Well, I guess Atomic Robo was always the...
That was the only one that was, really sticking.
Yeah.
And our friends at King Bone Press are on fire as well. I mean, come on.
It's a good time for comics right now.
Be rolling out your company. But what have we got?
Well, I got another small company here that I've been reading. I kind of went a little crazy and I ordered all their trades online.
Why would you do that?
It's because I found these first three trades to this one series and I was missing the last one. So I was like, I got to order it just to complete it. And then I just ended up getting them all. So I spent like 100 and something bucks.
Well, I was going to say, I hope that didn't set you back $1,000 or something.
So this one I read, it's by Big Dog Inc. Do you guys know that company?
Oh, yeah. They turned the corner again. They were good, and they kind of dipped a little.
Well, this is four trades collected, so this might be was when they were good. This might be older, I don't know. But it's The Legend of Oz and The Wicked West.
Oh, no, those are some recent, because that...
Those recent? Okay.
Pretty recent, because what happened was, I think it was maybe 3 years ago, 2 years ago, when that Oz, the books came out of copyright. Okay. So that's when you saw so much Oz stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to do that. Disney did that sequel movie, although they couldn't do anything from the movie, but they could take the stuff from the book, but they couldn't take anything. So you don't have any of the Ruby Slippers or anything that the movie added.
Well, this has Ruby Spurs.
But they could use the other stuff. So I'm glad to see that. Yeah, I used to, like, Penny for Your Soul was one I'd read about.
I ordered those, and I ordered The Critters, I think it was.
Oh, yeah, and Critter I used to like, too. But they kind of, I don't know, they sort of went the Zenoscope way a little bit.
Well, that's what I was going to describe them as, almost like a lesser Zenoscope company, except they have better covers.
Because they really got into that, especially at the shows. They really were into like the nude variant covers and the sex. Look, if that's what you got to do to move your product, but on some ways, it may also makes it tough because you're like, oh.
Their normal covers, though, are really nice.
Like, I'm at the booth with all the, where they got to have the post-its over half the covers.
Oh, jeez.
I'm glad you did. So talk to us about it.
Okay, so far, like I said, I had three trades, but I've only read the first two so far. And I'm a big Oz fan or Grimm Fairy Tales, any of that kind of stuff, Wonderland, whatever. And so that's why I picked this up. Anything Oz, I usually pick up. Plus, I like cowboys, too. But anyway, the first book mainly follows Dorothy, who's kind of like a cowboy slinging badass. And it was all right. It didn't really hook me by the end of it. It's just her going down the Golden Brick Road and... Like in a cowboy type setting, there's the lion isn't really a coward, actually. He's actually a gay lion. So they do something a little different with that. The scarecrow is this Indian type girl who basically is a steal-away character who's made out of straw and she doesn't really talk. The Tin Man's kind of a tough ass sheriff type cowboy. And the first book kind of left me cold, but the thing that got me hooked afterwards, which I like it a lot now. It's by Tom Hitchinson, who does a pretty good job, is after the first book, something happens to Dorothy and she's gone. So the rest of the series follows the characters you want to know, like these tribal mice that raise this boy. Like, he becomes a new character in it. And you know Dorothy's fate, and they're trying to find Dorothy, so you know they're going to be walking into something really bad. But as far as I know, she does not show up in the next two trades for sure. But yeah, it's just a really cool quest with these cool characters that kind of follow the book, but in more of a Western setting.
Hutchinson is the big boss there. He's a big, tall guy.
He's good. I like him. He used to
be based in, like, I think around San Diego or Long Beach, and then they moved out to, like, somewhere around Chicago now.
Yeah.
So I used to see him in all the local cons, and now I saw him when I was at Chicago, C2E2.
Has he ever written for any other companies?
I don't recall, because they've been around for a while now. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure he just was doing his own thing at Big Dog Inc. But I got onto them through Penny for Your Soul and Critter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm excited to get those.
Turned on.
The one thing that I found weird about the trades, though, there's no fine print or anything, like no copyright. Like, it doesn't have any of that stuff.
That's odd. I wonder if they're just bound comics. Do they look like they're bound floppies?
No, or? it's a nice trade, but the third trade has it. But the first two trade has no fine print at all.
Interesting. Because mm-hmm. I know sometimes never seen smaller that. Companies, they get their singles bound to make the trade sometimes.
Nope, these are normal, nice trades. Like, I like them. I like, I'm excited to have them all together. They'll look nice. But yeah, I'm hoping I like the other stuff. The thing that makes me kind of like this too is the fact that it's Oz, though. So I'm a little worried about the other stuff because of that. Like, I know Critters is kind of like about celebrity superheroes, I think, isn't it?
Well, she's like the small time. Well, originally she was like a small town girl, if I remember correctly, mm-hmm. integrated into the superhero scene. So that was pretty, and they do a good job of capturing her voice. Later on, it may have changed because I didn't really, mm-hmm. at some point, I sort of stopped reading a lot of the stuff. So I don't know.
Yeah, I feel a lot better now that I know that you like some of that stuff, though.
Yeah, and I think you like a Penny for Your Soul. I mean, we'll find out. We can talk about it when you get it.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely will be.
All right, Kevin, what have you got for us? Must be new Flowers of Evil that's come out.
Oh, Volume 10 came out.
I still don't know what that is.
It's even about perverts.
I've even heard Kevin talk about it, and I still don't know what it is.
What do you mean? What's hard to understand about this?
I don't know.
They're a bunch of perverts.
Doesn't sound like your type of thing.
But it's a coming-of-age story. You know, a guy is into another girl, and he steals her gym clothes, and then another girl makes him wear the gym clothes. And
oh, now I remember it. That was
you remember perfect. That now?
You're a pervert. That's so weird to read comics like that. I thought I was a pervert, but no, you're a fucking pervert.
It says there's some quote on, I think, on the back for like buying the thing, and it says "Perverts Unite" or something. But anyways, I read different stuff.
It's just so on. Usually you read like very PG type stuff, though. It's just very.
Not all the time.
But go on. What did you read recently, though, besides this Flowers of Evil?
My other vertical obsession.
Valiant?
No. That was supposed to be a cool segue because they're both published by Vertical Publishing.
Oh, that's a company. Okay.
But yeah, there was this little show that went onto Netflix mm-hmm. recently called Knights of Sidonia. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how involved like Netflix was. Like,
it's a cartoon. Like,
yeah, but it's like it seems like it was probably developed in Japan somewhere, and they maybe made it, and then Netflix like did all the. Paid for the voices or whatever. Like, I don't know what the division of labor was, but it obviously doesn't look like an American cartoon.
Does it look Canadian? Are there lots of beavers in it?
No. Outer space in the future, I would say no.
I've never seen a beaver here in Canada, ever.
Really?
Never.
Whenever they want to make a nature trail here, they were like, well, that beaver's home is going to have to go. We have to blow that up with dynamite. And I'm like, doesn't that kind of defeat the purpose of the nature trail if you're removing nature?
Do you chain yourself to the dam, Kevin?
I don't, but doesn't it make you pause for a second and wonder,
No, we had those filthy things in upstate New York, and they were a nuisance. You're right. Well, the dams, you have to, Kevin's right, you got to dynamite them. You can't take them apart. Like, they're substantial.
Little beaver brains fly everywhere.
I know they flood people's homes, but those humans had it coming.
I got YouTube.
There's a beaver dam there, and you build your house like on low-lying area right behind the dam. What do you think is going to happen?
Hey, sometimes you're there first, and the beavers move in after, buddy. Mr. Beaver lover.
Come on.
Well, I guess it is the national mascot of your nation.
It's the moose.
Do you have the beaver on your money? Oh, no, that's the Queen of England.
We could call her a beaver.
I'm sure there must be a bill with the beaver, or there used to be. There's got to be.
The nickel. Doesn't that have a beaver? We're sad.
You know, you see this money all the time.
No, because we use digital now. Everything's digital.
Oh, I haven't switched over to that world yet. I don't. What were we talking about?
You were going to tell us about a comic, I think.
Knights of Cydonia, which had an anime time. Yes.
So, anyways, it has an anime on Netflix, and I was like really excited. It was weird. Like, I got in, I guess, a few volumes before I even knew it was going to be going to Netflix. So it's like, oh, I'm cutting edge. I'm getting in, you know, before. So it covers, I'm trying to remember, if it was like probably five, six volumes. But there's certain things that I don't remember or have more impact when you're watching something. It's like you'll read about something and I'll be like, oh, all these people like horribly died. But it'll only be like two pages when you're reading it. But when you're watching the show, it's like they have a lot of emphasis. They show you everything that's going on for a few minutes. And then I'm like, wow, I don't remember when I was reading it. I don't remember it being so brutal and so graphic and everything. But then I flip back and it's there. It's just interesting how when they make an adaptation, even when it's pretty close, like this isn't someone interpreting the idea. This is basically everything is there, more or less. So it's just interesting to see that. I'm like, wow, that gives you a different perspective on everything.
What's it about?
It's basically, I guess I would say it's a combination of a lot of things, like the whole mecha fascination in Japan.
I don't like the mecha stuff usually.
Yeah. With like a whole Battlestar Galactica or Star Wars type of feel. Like the human race had to leave Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And like now they're all on this massive ship that sort of has a city inside. And they have a giant asteroid like that's in the middle of the ship. And then they have like an observational thing for like alien specimens like on top. So that's sort of like separate. So if they capture something,
mm-hmm.
hopefully it won't get inside. And then they're trying to escape from the aliens that originally came to Earth and messed everything up.
I find with these type of comics, though, the dialogue isn't the best sometimes, though.
Yeah, there's sometimes you get into weird cultural things, but I think it's more of the storytelling that I'm not used to, which is weird, because I think if I read more 80s comics, it would be easier for me to adapt to this Japanese type of thing.
Whoa, I find that completely. 80s comics, I think, are super dense.
Mm-hmm.
Where manga, I think, I can read like 100 volumes in a 10 set. Like, yeah. You know, there's not a lot going on usually.
Well, I think it's the storytelling.
You read them on the shitter. That's all they're good for.
Well, they're just like, you know, like a fight will take up like 50 pages or something. So.
Yeah. Like, this isn't, like, your type of, like, fist fights, but outer space fights will be sort of like that.
And so that's why I just thought you're comparing 80s, and I think of 80s as, like, super dense.
Me too.
Tons of text and you got to really pour over it.
Yeah, it's not in that sense. It's like the storytelling. Like nowadays, they'll usually have transitions where they'll say later or meanwhile. It just sort of jumps. And you're supposed to know that it's like, oh, it's a different day or it's a different scene or something. And I used to think of that more as 80s stuff. And nowadays they're like, oh, we better fill you in on what happened. The only type of thing I can think of that sort of did that nowadays is maybe the early issues of Hawkeye. They didn't really fill you in. Like they didn't tell you like there was a passage of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some modern TV shows do that too. It's like someone will be looking at a picture and there'll be characters in the picture and then it'll flash back and those same characters will be in the flashback. But you have to figure out by how the people look and that he was looking into a picture frame that it's a different time. And then when they get out of the flashback, it'll be to that same picture again so that you know you've come back to the nowadays type of scene.
Is it black and white?
No, wow. They have as many
color.
As many colors as they need. But there's a lot of red, a lot of white, because that's basically the ships or that type of thing.
Does space look cool?
It does. It looks very cool.
That's always important to me.
Yeah. So I'm at, I think, volume 9 right now. And it's, I think, volume 10 just about came out. But I think it's pretty interesting to see it evolve, because by the time you get to volume 8, I guess you could blame it partly on the printing, maybe, but the artwork looks like it's changing.
In a good way or a bad way?
I think it's a good way. It's just a different way. There's like more details. Like, I'll see some of the tech, and it'll be super detailed.
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of wonder if, like, how many, like, background artists, like, they usually have, like, the main artist, he does the characters or whatever, and then his assistants will be like doing the background or stuff. So I kind of wonder if they changed something up there. Like the tech is definitely being focused on more and it seems more realistic. I don't know. It's kind of hard to explain in some ways. Like some areas seem less bright and less distinct. I don't know. It's just kind of strange, but it like the lines at the beginning seem very solid. That's why I said you could sort of say, oh, well, it's like the printer's more faded, but it's like more than that. Some scenes definitely have more detail nowadays. It's just, it's really cool. But it keeps on evolving with the ongoing fight with the enemies. And it started out with, like, this kid. I guess people would say, like, Last Starfighter for a reference for, like, someone that's, like, in the inner workings of the ship. And that's all they've known. And they've just been playing, like, video games on, like, old models of stuff. So when they get up top to where everyone else is.
I'm surprised like you've seen that movie. Tell the truth.
I know. I know of it. Not so much seeing it.
I say that because Kevin has not seen Goonies or Labyrinth. Or he has seen Goonies recently. I forced him.
Yes. Or not all of some of the Star Wars movies, the original ones.
It's crazy.
I know. But I sort of know of them enough.
Wow, going out on a limb, you're familiar with the original Star Wars movie as well. Woo!
No, this is the thing. I don't think I've seen completely the original three.
That's crazy.
I mean, if you had no awareness of the original Star Wars movies, I would be slightly concerned.
Oh, I could just ignore that stuff easily.
I mean,
very easily.
They had a bit of an impact on popular culture, Kevin.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, people force me to watch some of them, so I can see the references when I watch other things. I can say, oh yeah, that's like when they blew up the Death Star or whatever. But you know, if you played video games when you were young, like all your life, and then you like meet other people, and then if you were going into like a real like the real thing,
and the controls, if you played video games all your life, wouldn't you be dead by the time you meet the new people?
I suppose. Maybe.
Hmm.
But it starts getting really creepy. Like, I think there's, I guess you would call it a horror element. Because the enemies are, like, reproducing any new tech or anything new that you can see. It's like an arms race. But once the enemy, like, takes over one of the ships or something, they can somehow break it down and start to learn. So you get like these half human hybrid alien things that don't really talk or know what to do exactly.
Like the Borg?
Way creepier than the Borg. Like, they're not even humanoid. They're just like all these tentacles and like weird stuff. So it's like one of the, like, someone that's killed, like one of the characters is in love with one of these characters that's killed and taken over by the enemy, and then they sort of like mimic it back to him, and it's some weird tentacle beast, and then it seems like he's falling in love with like this tentacle beast that has half of the body of the human he was in love with.
So this sounds like something I'd like, but I just can't. I can't read books backwards. It's just, I think it's so silly.
Well, maybe you can watch the
The show. You can watch it on Netflix.
Yeah, that's true. I can watch, try the show out. But even cartoons, I'm not big on cartoons really anymore.
Yeah, like there's some scenes cut, but they also give, like, it goes through fast, but it's not like they're cutting out a lot or they're extending stuff. Like, you only see a battle in an arena for a few pages, but then they expand it outward, but it's not like they're decompressing. It's weird that certain scenes take longer, but you're not, it doesn't feel like you're sitting there a long time. It's so cool to see some of those things play out, though, because you don't get to see like a gladiator fight for a long time when you're reading it, but when you're watching it, you get to see the full fight.
Well, at least it's really good stuff. I'll give them a flavor by watching the show. I mean, obviously the comic will be different, but it's something.
It is. It's really cool. I recommend it.
Okay, Andrew, when you go get new comics, yes, you need to pick up the Delinquents number one. Do you know what that is?
Is it the new Valiant book?
Yes, by James Asmus. Asmus.
Yes.
It's Fred VanLanty and Kano.
He's up on his friend VanLanty.
Quantum and Woody and Archer and Armstrong, correct?
Yeah.
I heard there's like some kind of ass map or something.
Oh, shut up. That's my job. First things first, Kano. Did he ever draw Hawkeye?
I think he drew Immortal Iron Fist.
Okay, because he looks like reading I could have swore like he would be a Hawkeye artist.
No, but he's in that school. I know what you mean. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is Archer and Armstrong and Quantum and Woody team-up book. I don't know if it's an ongoing or not. I hope it is.
No, it's just a mini.
But first question is, does this take place current where the Valiant universe is? Do you know?
It probably takes place after the whatever issue they're at in Quantum. Because I think Quantum pretty much ended at maybe 12. And this is sort of like the continuation of their book. But Archer and Armstrong is still going, so I'm not sure quite where that falls.
Compared to Hexed, this one I felt completely lost with the characters. But at the same time, I love this book so much I'm collecting it month to month.
It should be funny.
So, yeah, so it didn't bug me enough. Basically, it opens up with Armstrong, I guess it is. He's the bigger guy with the beard.
Yeah, yes. The drunk immortal.
Yes, he's running around with this bum. He stole some pies from a farm, and they're shooting at them with the shotgun. Now, what's his backstory for Armstrong? Is he like part of this like intergalactic, or is he just part of like this bum? Like he's a bum basically with a bag where he can grab anything he wants out of it.
He
has that. Yeah,
he's immortal.
Okay,
and so he's Charlie Goodtime. To mask his inner pain. He just likes to have a good time and drink and party.
There was no sign of him being immortal. So, like, there was some stuff like that missing. But, yeah, basically they're running to get onto this train to escape it. And when they get on the train, he finds out that his buddy was shot. So his buddy gives him this map, which I forget what it is, but there's something there anyway. And basically the last bum that had it etched it on his bum. So it'd be safe. And it's so cool because, well, I don't know if cool is the right word, but it's funny because where the asshole is, the anus, it's cut out. So there's like this little hole in the middle. And so basically, yeah, so this map is the big part of the story. And like I say, the artwork's kind of like a Hawkeye or Mortal Iron Fist, I guess, type artist. And it's really well done. Has kind of like of a... See, some parts of the comic has kind of like a 70s feel to it, too, I find.
That's not a bad thing.
No. And see, Quantum and Woody, too, I was a little confused about. But yeah, it's really funny. It's worth picking up. It's a very meaty story. You really get your bang for the buck. One part was kind of weird is Archer and Armstrong, they were playing strip poker together. What? Do they have that type of relationship or?
They're Archer is the one from a sheltered background.
Yes.
So
yeah,
he's
got
the kind
that,
of naive
yeah.
one. Mm-hmm. And then Armstrong is the world experienced one. And so they have that tension.
Well, that's why they were doing it, because Armstrong was said it like he has to experience everything or something like that. And so, yeah, they were playing strip poker, which just seemed weird to me because two buddies, you know, aren't going to do that.
Yeah, so they, because they originally started, like a lot of things, started out as enemies, but mm-hmm. Archer had a very sheltered, was raised in a super religious background where he just studied fighting and religion.
Mm-hmm.
And so he meets Armstrong, who's sort of roughly the antithesis of that, and
yeah,
so he's like, having him experience the world in a different way. Both the partnerships are set up with sort of opposites, like Quantum and Woody also have opposite
mm-hmm.
dynamic,
yeah, which I don't understand yet either, but
I think that's what makes it so much fun though, because the characters are always bouncing off of each other, getting angry at each other, like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I'm excited, very excited for the four to meet. They haven't met yet, but it got me wanting the other stuff, so I'm definitely going to be picking up the new versions of these guys, their books.
Yeah, quick plug for Archer and Armstrong. Issue 23 wrapped up like the latest arc, and it sort of ties everything together nicely, and it goes all the way back to the first issue. And it's like, yes! So consistent.
Yeah, let me know how this fits in, if they refer to it in the main series or anything.
Yeah.
It's been good, and it's been, I mean, aside from that brief thing, it's been pretty standalone-y as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because they had the one crossover, right, with Bloodshot, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it totally made sense why it would happen and everything, so.
Yeah, I'm curious how that will be collected for when I get it.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if, I hope that has its own trade. Or do you think it's more of a Bloodshot story?
It would probably be its own trade for each series.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can see both sides. Like, if it was just an Archer and Armstrong slash Bloodshot, like, it should sort of, like, each of the readers should pick it up. But it would be weird, though, if there was a volume number and you had, like, 1, 2, 3, and then it's, like, this one shot. Unless you put a volume 4
like
on that.
Marvel, for example, they'll do like 1, 2, 3, and then if there's a crossover, it won't have a number. Like, it'll have just both titles, and then.
But then you'd have 4, and then you'd be missing, like, if you didn't know there was something in between, you go 3 to 4, but you'd be missing something in between 3 and 4. That's always weird.
But yeah,
well, Marvel's also not afraid to collect the same thing in multiple volumes.
Even Valiant's come out with the Harbinger Wars hardcover now. And they just had the soft cover before. And I think they both collect different things.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm going to take my dive into Valiant, and I'm going to pick up most of the trades. If I can find a good store, that will send them all to me in one lump.
Well, I know I'm on record for hating on digital comics, but I do have to point out that I did, I'm sure most everyone's aware of it, but if you're not, I would suggest people check out the Humble Bundle. It's Humble, like as in not arrogant, and Bundle as in group. I have both taken advantage of their Dynamite and Boom offerings. And mm-hmm. I know they did a Walking Dead and a Transformers, and they just have these huge piles of DRM-free digital comics that you pick your own price point and get a whole ton of them. Like,
yeah,
I said, I'm not a huge fan, but people should check it out.
Yeah, I did my first one with Boom. That was like 100 issues of Boom or some ridiculous thing.
Yeah, it's a lot of content. I mean,
yeah.
I haven't started reading that, but I did go through a bunch of the Dynamite ones that I bought. And it's like, look, I wouldn't... ordinarily probably buy most of that stuff, but getting a whole bunch of it all together, like if it's stuff I'm kind of interested in, getting it all together makes it worth it. Even though there's not a lot in there that I was super stoked for, but I'm like, yeah, it's an awful lot of content for a cheap amount of money.
Yeah, like, well, I don't have any interest of reading a Sons of Anarchy comic since I don't watch the TV show, but there was a lot of other stuff like crime series and sci-fi and everything that I want to read. So
you should try out the 28 Days Later then, if it's up there, by Nelson.
It wasn't. It was like RoboCop.
They have the whole series in one omnibus for like $24.
Yeah.
And it's worth it if you guys see it.
Yeah.
But it's just, I just wanted to steer people's attention to it. So it's always a fun...
Bumhole.
The only thing was they don't have a download all button, and I thought maybe it would, like, overload their servers or something, but clicking, like, download for your specific DRM-free option, like, 60 times is a little irritating. But, you know, I can't really complain with the amount of money I paid and the amount of comics I got, but, you know, that was the only thing I think they could improve on there.
Well, I just thought it was nice that you actually get these things.
Yeah.
I mean, if that matters to you. I mean, I have some.
Yeah, you don't have to be so greedy, Kevin. You can wait.
But
grab a couple at a time.
You know, with a lot of those services, your Marvel Unlimited, your Comixology, you're not really getting copies of it. You're just getting access to it. You know, presumably forever. But these, you're getting the actual the files themselves. So
yeah,
kind of like a Kickstarter.
Yeah, it was definitely cool, and I liked that you could adjust where you wanted the money to go. So if you wanted more to go to charity and less to go to the publishers, you could adjust that.
And it seemed, I'm curious if this is going to continue. It seems sort of analogous. It reminds me when the studios discovered VHS. Because they had all this content and like a whole new way to make money off of it. Yeah. I mean, they had to make the tapes or whatever, but in some way they were able to double dip. And then when DVDs came out, they could triple dip, and now it's streaming quadruple. But now that people are aware of it, it's less so. So it's got to be a real boon to some of these publishers to be like, we have all this content that we've already paid for. We can just dump it. You know, even if we get pennies on the dollar, in some ways it's free money.
Yeah, and some of it was still for ongoing books, I noticed. Like, they might only have two or three issues, so if you're interested, you could jump on with four, five, or six.
Yeah, and I saw that with the Dynamite was that way. But yeah, I'm looking forward to sort of sticking my toes in the water, but, you know, even old fogies like me got to adapt once in a while.
It was funny how you said, for someone that doesn't like digital comics, you're sure getting a lot of them.
Yes, it's surprising. Well, I noticed it when I was checking, like, my Dropbox. I filled up the Dropbox, and this was just off of things from, mostly from Kickstarter, to be honest with you. I was surprised at how many I had, and I was like, oh, without even realizing it, suddenly I've got billions of comics. Those are not, doesn't include all the free Comixology stuff I've got.
Yeah.
Some of the Marvel codes I've redeemed and everything. All right, folks, I think that's hopefully that gives you a little dose, and hopefully we'll be back on the regular schedule a little bit. It's always a little tricky. I know Super Steve will be coming in freshly suntanned.
For sure we'll have another one in 2 weeks because Steve will be back. So we'll be
And he keeps the trains running on time here.
These two fall apart. We tried to do an episode, and they're just like, oh, I can't get the recorder working.
I want to talk about DC Comics.
They can't handle it with Steve gone. So we're going to be – I'm going to try and train him, and we'll make sure we don't do that again.
But thanks for listening. And again, you can find us on the Twitters, the Facebooks, and the forums. Until Super Steve comes back, keep reading them independent comics.
She was a bad, bad girl. So he told her so. Under the shadows of doubt, behind the whisper of lust, he said, no touching tonight. She closed her eyes in his trust. She said, tuck me in. He knew his judgment was sound. Still, he pulled back the sheets and said, you'd better lie down, 'cause the angels are watching. She closed her eyes and said, quit the talking. You can hurt me, do whatever you like. Her every word was in italics, as it would fall from